Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Slaughter Podcast will be discussing topics that some listeners may find disturbing.
If you're still listening, get up and make sure you've locked your doors.
They'll get in. They're coming.
I'm Lucy.
And I'm Emma.
And we are, it feels like longer than episode 6. I feel like we've been doing this for longer.
Yeah, I feel like I've aged 100 years since I've been researching this podcast.
I'm enjoying it.
I'm liking it, but I also feel like, as well as the murders they committed, they've also taken a piece of my life with them.
I love the Facebook group. People on the Facebook group are so nice.
The Facebook group give me life, that's true. What the murderers take away, the Facebook group are giving back.
Absolutely. So if you want to join the Facebook group, just look for S'Laughter, and you can either add it as a friend if you find my profile, but there's also a group that you can get approved to, but if you add me as a friend, I'll add you onto it.
Where we discuss secrets.
Yes, all the secret things we can't put on Twitter. So, am I first this week?
Yeah, it's definitely your turn first.
So, my murder this week is John Christie,
which doesn't excite me massively, because episode 1 of Rillington Place was a little bit dry.
It's so jammy, because my mum just told me about this a couple of weeks ago. I think she told you at the same time. We're away in Durham, near Durham.
Yeah.
And I was going to do it anyway, and then she called me and told me, oh, there's a new drama about this. And it was a bit like when you did Marianne Cotton. It was just weird timing. So I've researched it. I wasn't that impressed with the drama, but I am impressed with the murder. So we'll see. So John Christie was born in 1898. So it's another quite old tale, which we've done quite a few of, in Yorkshire, Sheffield. Now, I don't think of Sheffield as Yorkshire. I think because it's so near the Midlands.
It's probably Yorkshire. I love Sheffield.
I've not been there a lot.
I would like a Sheffield boy. I love that accent because it's northern, but it's soft.
Yeah, that's true. It is soft. And his father was a disciplinarian and his mother was overprotective. Now, we do see this with quite a few different murderers.
That split between father and mother and their approach.
And also the overprotective mother. Now, I've just
That's been... the Fred West that we discussed last week. Right?
Ed Gein had a crazy overprotective mother. Norman Bates' mother was very heavily involved in his life. And I've just been teaching a unit on schizophrenia, and they do have a theory of schizophrenia, which is a schizophrenic mother, which is a mother that is overbearing and overpowering, and it is linked to schizophrenia. So it is linked to mental illness, having like a full-on mother who's overbearing. God knows how I ended up so normal.
Yes!
She's not laid back.
I'm worried for your brother, is all I can say.
So he left school at 15, and he served as a signalman in World War I. He was temporarily blinded by a mustard gas attack, and that also caused hysterical muteness. Now,
hysterical muteness, that seems like a massive juxtaposition, like an oxymoron even. Yeah. Like, I'm hysterical, but nobody knows. What? That's just what? Violent twitching?
And it's called hysterical muteness, but there's no way to express your hysteria if you're mute. And it lasted 3 years, and some people said he was doing it for attention. Now, I can't think of
if you're trying to get attention, being really fucking quiet
is not the way.
It's not the way that the children in my class are doing it. No, if I'm honest.
There's no look at me about this. There's no hands up, I want to answer every question.
And also, temporary blindness is also like the worst thing for a signalman. I want my signalman to see exactly what's going on. Yeah. He can't see what's happening and he can't tell you if it's fucked up either. He is the chocolate teapot of World War One.
Absolutely. So, yeah, he was basically no use nor ornament. He had early signs of sexual dysfunction as well, and a lot of control issues from the off. He started visiting prostitutes aged 19. And if there's ever an age you don't really need to go to a prostitute, there's enough naive teenagers.
I was
going to
say, before the ages of 24, I didn't need help.
No. No.
Not that I'm going to prostitutes now.
I was going to say, all those errand boys you've been getting.
But when you're
your old age.
But when you're younger, I don't know.
I know, you're all sort of feeling each other out, aren't you, a little bit? Like, there's no.
You're just falling onto dicks left, right, and centre.
Okay.
That probably says more about me than it does about John Christie.
But yeah, at 19, everyone's horny. I mean, you don't need to go and pay for it, surely.
Yeah, you could find somebody.
Yeah. So 1920.
Maybe it was an accident. Maybe he was really horny and he was like, oh, she's into me too. Look at the way she's banging on that window. Seems like she's really gagging for it. Like the red velvet curtains, everything is screaming, she wants me. And then he realised he had to pay afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, I've known people who do that. Not very well, but I've known that there are people that sort of nip around your house and then say, by the way, you've got to pay right before the act. In 1920, he married Ethel Simpson. Now, that is an old lady name, isn't it?
Like, she came out of the womb wrinkly and liver spotted.
Because you're little baby Ethel. It's just doesn't work, does it? It's like Derek. Little baby Derek, little baby Ethel.
There was something, I was reading a BuzzFeed article today. That's the kind of journalistic integrity we have. And it was about baby names of 2016 and which were the most popular. And it was saying that TV shows had a heavy influence. So Stranger Things was big this year. And the mother in that is called Joyce. So apparently the name Joyce has increased by 20-30%. Like, can you imagine Joyce, little 5-year-old Joyce. Carol is another one that's gone up this year.
There's a lot of Marthas.
No, thank you.
No.
Every Carol I know is a stone cold bitch. She's usually the one that comes round collecting money for a birthday card of someone I've never heard of and then complains when you put coins in. What do you want from me, Carol? Blood? You're not getting it.
Carols are never less than 50.
Oh, no.
Surely.
No. Well, they are now.
Little baby Carol.
Kaz.
So he married Ethel Simpson Waddington. I didn't have the punchline there before. Waddington. But kept seeing prostitutes. So he's married, but he's still going for the old pay-as-you-go. And he also became a postman and was sent to prison for 3 months for stealing postal orders.
Oh.
If I was a postman, the worst I'd do is I'd just be reading all the postcards. You definitely would.
You'd have a feel of them, and if there was something protruding, you'd want to have a look. Maybe have a look, and then I'd post it.
Yeah.
Definitely. There's no need to steal it when you can just get all the secrets anyway.
Yeah, I'd definitely have a look. So Christie went to prison he was...
Stealing the post,
but then he also went to prison again for violent behaviour soon after he got out. Then after he came out of prison, he broke up with Ethel and he moved to London.
What?
He's like, I've seen things in prison. I've changed my life. Good day to you. Off to London. He's going to go live the life he's always dreamed of. So age 29, he was sent to prison.
Still a young man. What?
For theft.
Didn't really turn it around, did he?
And spent 9 months inside. So he went to a London prison instead. He got out, moved
I've
in.
Travelled.
Yeah. He got out, moved in with a prostitute, then got another 6 months for assaulting her. So, they might as well have just left his cell with his bed again. I mean, he was in and out, revolving door.
Has somebody told him the law? Like, maybe he's just going through life being like, was that illegal? I didn't know. Because in and out of prison that much, I feel like maybe he's confused.
He might be confused. He might just be a rotten shit. I think that's pretty likely.
It's also true.
Yeah. He also got accused of several more assaults. Didn't go to prison for those. But he did.
Well, after a while, you stop caring, don't you?
And then he went to
prison
again.
Another assault. Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, we'll just lump
them into
one.
Can't deal with the paperwork.
No. But then car theft, back in.
Car theft? What sort of year are we talking? Like, if he's 30 now, from 1890, was it?
1898.
That car would have been amazing. You could have caught up with it jogging. Like, how did he even steal that thing?
Just steal
Max
it.
Max speed of drive 25 away. Miles an hour.
Police on foot just chasing him down the road. So he was just in and out of prison all the time, which will be funny later on when you find out what job he did. So he asked Ethel to come to London and live with him. So he got out of prison again.
Oh, what? And called up Ethel? All right, fuck boy. That's not... If you ditched me once, you can't just ring me back up now that you're in London and be like, oh, actually, no one's as good as you. I knew that. I knew that in Sheffield. And you just didn't listen.
And he also was... prepared to carry on sleeping with prostitutes, so obviously he'd be like,
I'm prepared to carry on sleeping
just
with
going out for a walk, love.
I'm prepared for that with him. Like, I'm prepared, I will date you, and I'm also prepared to sleep with other people if that's necessary.
And she was down, she was up for it, so she came down to London to live with him. And he kept seeing prostitutes, and he started getting quite violent sexual urges, and he sort of got a little bit into necrophilia.
Just a tiny bit. How do you dip your wick in necrophilia?
Well, a friend tells you about it. You think it's a good idea.
Yeah, but I still want more logistics. So, where's he getting the dead people?
I mean, I don't think he has.
Or are they just playing dead? He's like, lie incredibly still.
Well,
and
I'm
hold
assuming
your
a lot of it is from his point of view, because there's not a lot of evidence to go on, unless they went around interviewing prostitutes. But I think it was all kept on the down low, obviously from his side. So I think he probably just liked the idea of it, and maybe
right.
like
became
a bit,
interested.
A bit of sex talk.
Yeah,
tell me you're dead.
Just like jerking off over a gravestone,
that kind of stuff. So
I mean, that is the gateway. Like, you having a casual wank on a gravestone, next thing you know, you're fucking a corpse.
Yeah.
Slippery slopes.
That's what they say. So, Christy and his wife Ethel moved into 10 Willington Place in Notting Hill. So they bought a house. In fact, I don't think they bought it. They
rented it. I mean, that just
it.
Shows what mortgage companies were like back then. That he'd been in and out of prison that much and he could get a mortgage.
Yeah.
I was interrogated by the mortgage Gestapo to get this place. They even complained that I spent too much money on petrol getting to work. I was like, how do you want me to cut that down? The distance from here to my job is not going to change.
And this is in central London as well. If he can afford a place in central London...
With zero questions asked. Question one, have you got a job? Maybe.
A
question two,
postman,
are you gonna like? Are you likely to, you know, fall short of your payments? Well, I do go to prison every 6 weeks.
Yeah. So, as World War II started, he asked to join the police force, and they said yes! His criminal record was ridiculous.
Got lost in the post. He'd fucking nicked it.
Yeah, the DBS just went missing, so they just said, well, go for it. He was assigned to Harrow Road Police Station, and it just seems they were taking anyone. I mean, were they not checking?
Although World War II, do you think the shortage at... Was there a shortage of men available who were, you know, fit to work?
But I mean, I guess he's a bit older by this time. I mean, he's...
Which probably meant was the reason why he was staying in London, right? Rather than going and signing
but
up.
But surely there's a whole generation of people his age. I mean, he can't have been the only guy who could be a policeman in the area. There's got to be better options than...
Like women! Like 50% of the population yeah. who are kicking ass.
But he started sleeping with a woman he worked with. I'm assuming she was a receptionist or something. I mean, they wouldn't have let her do anything important. And her husband caught them at it and beat him up.
Nice.
So he was shagging. I mean, he's shagging people at work. He's shagging prostitutes. Anyone but Ethel. Really.
Have you seen... Is there a photograph available of the real John Christie?
There is. And he looks like a normal old man.
Because that's the impression I got from episode one of the drama, which sort of is up to this point, was that he was constantly having affairs with people.
Yeah.
And yet he was a lot older than the woman he was sleeping with, and the actor is not cute.
No, he was not cute. He's distinctly average. I mean, he looked like someone's dad.
So I'm not sure what his how he draws them in.
He's just paying for most of it, to be fair. But what he wasn't paying for, I think he was just... maybe he was charming. I think he was pretty weird, to be honest. So the first person that he killed at this point, he started... he wanted necrophilia. There's only one way to get it. So he killed Ruth Forrest in 19...
There's not one way to get it.
I mean, he could have gone digging.
He could have gone digging. He could have got a job in a mortuary.
He could have.
He could have stuck his dick in a bag of ice cubes.
True.
He could have got a mannequin.
It's not the same.
He could have moulded a human body out of clay.
True.
I've got more. I'll save those for later.
So the first woman that he killed was a 21-year-old Austrian girl who was sleeping with him. Not even a prostitute.
You're getting sex anyway. Why ruin a good thing?
Yeah. And he impulsively strangled her. And then...
Impulsively.
I think he just thought, this is a good idea. And then had sex with her corpse and then buried her in... Not even his own garden. The communal garden. The communal garden at Rillington Place. So he had enjoyed...
We had a communal garden when I was growing up. That's how poor we were.
Did you bury any pets in it?
We didn't bury any pets in it, but when it was my birthday, when I was about 4 or 5, we had a bouncy castle, and I remember being really bratty and pissed off because we had to have the neighbours' kids on the bouncy castle, even though they weren't invited to my party because it was their garden too.
To be fair, they had no ownership over that bouncy castle.
Yeah, I was in their garden though. I was still a bitch about it.
Well, starting to need to go on.
I've got regrets.
basically, this was an impulsion, but he was like, I pretty much enjoyed that. I'm going to do that again. So he planned the next murder. He was like, I'm definitely going to try this again. So he killed his 32-year-old neighbour, Muriel, another fantastic name, Muriel Edie. Basically, he invited her over, and he told her that he'd got a cure to her bronchitis. They made out of a special mixture.
Yeah, I bet it is. That's like when they're like, oh, semen's the best thing for a sore throat.
I was like, that's definitely a euphemism there.
Oh, I can cure your bronchitis.
Because he's no doctor. And then he gassed her with
carbon monoxide. I'm going to take your breath away.
So he gave her some carbon monoxide.
Just gave her some carbon monoxide.
With his special mixture. And then he choked her to death while she was passed out. And then had sex with her body. And she went in the garden as well.
The same garden.
In 1948, a man called Timothy Evans and his pregnant wife, Beryl, another lovely name, moved into the top floor flat of Rillington Place. So it was a block of flats and they moved in upstairs. Yes.
This I saw on Coming Up on Rillington Place. This is episode 2 now. Yeah. This is spoiler alerts. If you're really into Rillington Place, the drama on BBC, stop listening now.
Just save it.
Don't listen to Dave Gorman. Listen to Lou Reed's The Internet.
Yeah.
And then come back.
Come back to us. Don't leave us hanging. So they moved in. He had a learning difficulty, so he was below average IQ. He was very low IQ. She gave birth to a baby girl, and then she got pregnant again. So they obviously weren't using contraception. And basically, she freaked out. She couldn't afford the baby. They both couldn't afford the baby. He couldn't really hold down a job. He wasn't the brightest. Christy said to them, I can sort you out with an abortion. And abortions were illegal then. So there was a lot of backstreet abortions. Now, I looked into this a little bit.
We're going full coat hanger.
Well, if you see Call the Midwife, then you know there's kind of... There was a lot of sort of offhand abortions.
I can't watch Call the Midwife.
Well, there was a lot of, like...
Too many babies, and I just feel sad that I'm never going to have one.
You will have one.
I might not. I'm just going to have a puppy instead.
Oh, it's better.
It is better. They're never going to be a teenager and rebel.
So, basically, a lot of people would charge... They would sort of claim themselves to be able to do backstreet abortions. They'd charge people a lot of money. They weren't using sterilised equipment. They were total amateurs. Lots of women died from it. The ones that didn't die got infections and were very sick from it. But people were just so desperate. Now, he just said, basically, I can do an abortion. Come and get it sorted out. And then he gassed her. Made no attempt to try any abortion. Strangled her to death. Had sex with her body. And then told Evans that a lot of the stuff that she'd been trying to use before she went to him for an abortion had killed her. So he said that she'd be killed
by a lady. I did not see that coming. I thought he was just going to give her a horrendous job.
No. Just pure... Evans was out, just killed her. Did the usual. So she's dead.
So, and then he's having to dig a hole in the garden. Did he bury her in the garden too?
No, he put her in a sewer drain.
Because I was going to say, like, if immediately your wife is missing and then I'm digging in the garden again, you're going to start getting suspicious.
Yeah.
Sewer drain.
No, a sewer drain. So he told Evans, she's died as a concoction of all these things. Don't go to the police.
I mean, the disposals of these bodies must be, like...
It gets a lot
worse.
It's
not saying that he's cut them up or anything. So he did.
Yeah.
But he's having to keep the body somewhere while he digs a hole. Like, where's the entrance to this sewer drain? Like, he just seems to be lugging bodies around in broad daylight.
I mean, he's clearly not bothered by a dead body, because you will find out it gets a lot worse.
He obviously feels like he's gotten away with it. Like, that's it. I mean, that just like a feeling of I can't be caught. I'm better than everyone.
His wife's in the house this whole time. So, Evans went away, lived with his parents for a while, couldn't cope with trying to hide Beryl's death. He came back, he went to the police, but he told them he accidentally killed her.
What?
He basically said, I've killed my wife!
Was that just, like, power of suggestion from Christy?
I think he was just scared to get him in trouble. Do you know when you really like someone, and you think, oh, I don't really want to get them in trouble because they were doing me a favour... but I've got to say something. So he's like, well, maybe if I take the blame. So he basically said, oh, I accidentally killed her. I've disposed of her body in a sewer drain. Sorry.
So did he know that that's what Christy had done?
Yes, Christy had told him. He said, she died because of this. We can't go to the police because abortions are illegal. Therefore, I put her body in the sewer drain. And you just go away and forget about it. And he left the baby with Christy. The little girl that they'd had. So the police found nothing. They looked in the sewer drain. They couldn't find anything. They questioned Evans again.
What's he called? Splinter. He's got her.
Splinter's got her in the sewers.
Is that what he's called?
No.
The rat from Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Heroes in a half shell.
Tell power! But they went to question Evans again. And this time he said, oh, actually it was Christy.
Right.
So he caved. So again, they searched Rillington Place again. A lot led the police to find the bodies of Beryl, baby Geraldine, the baby.
She's gone.
And she had been strangled with a man's tie. I mean, that's sickening, isn't it?
Yeah, I just vomited a bit.
So Evans gave several different stories. Evans couldn't keep his story straight because
he didn't understand.
He didn't really get it. He was just confused by the whole thing. He was mortified that his wife had died. I think she probably got him up and dressed in the morning. So he was just lost without her. So he said to police that he'd strangled Beryl due to debts. But then he said that Christy did it.
How horrendous that him admitting to murdering her is at that time was better than admitting your wife had tried to get an abortion.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Like, for this reason alone, yeah, like, that should be the argument for pro-choice, because the stigma attached to abortion should never be so great that people are feeling that amount of pressure.
I mean, the reality is, women are gonna get abortions, legal or not, let's make it safer for them.
Or let's just start researching some decent contraception.
Yeah. Some foolproof contraception. And make it easier for women to bloody get it as well. I'm having a nightmare. So, and then he said that he gave Beryl abortion pills and that killed her.
Shall we quickly just talk about beer or something and hope that we get some male listeners?
And beer and football.
Football, go!
So Christy convinced the police he wasn't involved, because he was a lot brighter than Evans. So he said, he sort of spelled the tale, he said, I'm not involved. His wife backed him up as well. Now, we saw in Rillington Place that he was sort of quite aggressive to her.
Yes.
I think there was a lot of the dynamic there. So I think she was pretty scared of him, to be honest. But she said, yeah, Christy was with me. It can't have been him. I've been here the whole time. So she backed him up and did.
She must have been aware. I mean, if she knew that he was dangerous, or even suspected, you wouldn't want to rile him up.
No. So in 1950, Evans went on trial. He had the worst defence team. They were useless. They basically ignored all the inconsistencies that Christy had said and his wife had said. They didn't really present him as an alternative killer. So Christy charmed the jury. They thought he was all right. And Evans was found guilty for these murders. Tragic. And he was hanged on March the 9th
what?
In 1950. It's such a terrible case of getting the wrong man, clearly. What? And because he was, like, he was low intelligence, he didn't have much hope, really, bless him. He's already lost his wife, he's lost his daughter.
And he was just trying to protect her memory by not letting people think that she'd had an abortion.
Yeah. Just terrible. So, after that, weirdly, Christy became quite depressed.
As so he should.
After the trial, he lost his job at the post office. His wife then disappeared in 1952.
Well, let's just check the garden, shall we? Yeah.
Christy told everyone she'd gone back to Sheffield, but then the people in Sheffield, he told that she was too ill to speak to or write to them. Basically, he'd strangled her, and he placed her body, rather than in the garden, which is...
Sewer! Either loft!
No.
Cellar!
He must have been scared that the garden was either full or the police had already checked there, so he put her under the floorboards. So in the cavity. A bit of insulation.
A bit of...
Stop the drafts.
Well, can you imagine the smell in summer?
I know, disgusting. The neighbours started complaining about bad odours.
Yeah,
he basically disinfected the whole place.
He just lived in it.
He just lived in it.
That smell must have clung to him.
That must have turned him right on.
I mean, I had egg on toast for breakfast, and I was smelling that all day.
but he was a necrophiliac, so he loved it. The next year, so he's got her in the floorboards a whole year.
Yeah. Probably made a little fuck hole for himself.
Seepage through the ceiling. I mean, that body's not going to last forever. Next year, Christy killed Rita Nelson, a pregnant prostitute who had promised an abortion. So that old, I'll sort you out love line. Placed her body in an alcove behind a cupboard in the kitchen.
Okay.
Now, I've got some shit behind my cabinets in the kitchen that I need to really get down and give a good scrub. But you just stuck a body there.
I mean, if he continues, his house is going to be like 60% flesh.
Yeah. I mean, he's keeping the drafts out some way. So the same year, he killed 26-year-old Kathleen Mooney, another prostitute.
We're still going.
Yeah. She was also stoned in the alcove. Bit more room. That one's rotted down a bit. Shove another one in there.
Oh, rotted down is not a phrase that I want to hear again.
Lastly, there's another one.
Lastly, thank God for this.
26-year-old Hectorina McLennan. Now, if that sounds like a made-up name in a panic, then I've never known one.
Hectorina.
What's your name? Hectorina McLennan. I mean, it looks like you've been clutching at straws to make
Or Hector McLennan was that much of a narcissist that when he had a baby girl, he's like, nope, Hectorina.
Yeah, she's a female version of me.
She's got my moustache.
So he did the same too. He gassed her, he strangled her, he had sex with her, he put her in the alcove. So there's three bodies in the alcove now. He then...
I mean, that can't be an alcove. That's got to be a spare room.
I mean, they're shoved in there. And then he papered over, bit of wallpaper, over the cupboard. No one's ever going to look in there. Despite the stench of dead bodies coming from them. So rather than sort it out, rather than having a good clear out, spring clean, he thought, well, I'll move out. I'll let someone else deal with it. So he basically put up a load of air fresheners, showed a load of tenants round, and then not only did he leave the house smelling of rotting flesh, he also screwed them out of 3 months' rent. So they moved in.
People moved in.
They moved in. They couldn't afford to pay the place for the place because he'd screwed them out of 3 months' rent, and then they had to move out after 24 hours. So the low one there was empty. So the flat upstairs was like, I think they might have had problems with their kitchen. So they basically said to the landlord of the place, can we just come in and borrow the kitchen? So they came in to make themselves a lovely dinner and noticed the smell and found bodies all over the house. Disgusting. So the police began looking for Christie because he was the obvious person. He was found 10 days later, run out of money. So he went on the run with sod all.
Yeah.
He admitted to 4 of the murders straight away. He said he killed his wife in mercy as she had already been choking to death. And if there's one thing that someone who's choking to death needs, that's struggling just to help him along the way.
Yeah.
And saying the 3 prostitutes had become aggressive and tried to steal from him. So that was self-defense. And then he also admitted to the murders of the bodies in the garden after a while, once they were discovered. But also he said Beryl was a mercy killing. So he had little stories. He's like these kind of people that can never sort of admit defeat and just say, no, but he told me to do it. No, but it was because of this. He tried to plead insanity at his trial, but the prosecution argued that because he tried to conceal the murders, it was obviously not insanity. As in fact, he was found guilty and sentenced to death by hanging, and he was hanged 2 weeks later at Pentonville Prison in London. I think they tore down the house, so it's just grass now. But
it's probably for the best. Really lush grass, I expect.
Yeah, really well fertilised. Because there's so many bodies put there. Evans was later found innocent, obviously too bloody late, for his daughter's murder, which he was tried for. And he wasn't tried for his wife's death, but he was granted a posthumous pardon in 1966.
Unless you're going to build a statue of someone, it's not really worth a lot.
Even though I won't give a shit. But it's too late.
What about a statue? You can fucking get me a statue.
Well, not if you're dead.
No, I want one.
What's the good of that?
We had somebody... We were just talking before podcast recording about colleagues that have died.
Yeah.
Cheery conversation. The colleague that I had who died...
There was a statue at the playground.
No, they planted a tree, and then because children go through school and then obviously within a matter of years they no longer remember that person, someone who didn't know like the meaning of that tree is lost. Someone kicked it down while it was still like a sapling.
Oh, that's
got
sad.
Kicked down. So I want
that kid get absolutely annihilated by the teachers.
See, not really, because yeah, they kicked the tree down. They got as in trouble as you would for kicking any sapling down.
Yeah.
But, like, there's no point putting the guilt of it being a memorial for somebody because they didn't know.
Yeah, fair play.
So I want a cast iron statue. If I die whilst still teaching... No, I want something, like, fully cemented in, like, really strong. I want people to line up and salute me every day.
I don't know, I just want a table named after me.
A table.
You can draw a few dicks around it. I mean, that's pretty fitting. That's about respect. It's going to be a pure
dick table.
As in life, so yeah. In death.
We remember her as she was a
covered
bellend.
In dicks.
Okay. part of what me and Lucy do is that we don't really tell each other who we're going to research and present for the podcast. So I've chosen a murderer, but it seems to be, there's a lot of parallels, a lot of similarities.
You keep doing this.
Yeah, he's a male, similar ages.
It's because all British murderers are the bloody same.
Disposed of the bodies in quite a similar way. My guy is pretty much the modern day version of John Christie. The Scottish modern version of John Christie. Peter Tobin.
Love it.
Was that Scottish?
No.
Peter Tobin. So he was...
Peter Tobin. No, terrible.
He was convicted of 3 murders, but there are suspicions of many more, which... And investigations are still ongoing. There's still people fighting and researching and trying to...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Pin other things on him. Like, it's the belief of some people that he's one of the worst serial killers that we've had. But it's difficult to say. I mean, there's other serial killers like Henry Lee Lucas, who confessed to a few crimes and then once was in prison just started confessing to every crime that was going. So that does happen, but it does seem like he
fits. In for a penny, in for a pound.
Pretty much. Like, if I'm going to be here, I might as well get as much media as attention as I can. So, this started... Well, he's an interesting character. He was caught in about 2006 because of a really high-profile case.
That's quite recent.
Yeah. And once he'd been caught... for a particular murder, he pretty much refused to talk. He'd been arrested and refused to say anything. So the police set up Operation Anagram, which was a multi-agency, inter-police force operation to find out about this guy's life because he was refusing to say anything. They didn't know where he was living, where he'd been, what he'd been doing for vast periods of his life. Operation Anagram was to find out who was this guy. So a lot of the information that we have is pieced together from interviews or where they've shown his picture and then fat people have come forward, and it's all very much a jigsaw.
Fat people have come forward.
Where they found people.
Oh, I was saying fat people have come forward because they've got loads of free time.
They just want to get out the house.
Yeah, they just got no friends, so they just wandered in and had a chat. And I was thinking Operation Anagram, I was expecting them just to be solving anagrams.
I love the names of the operations they come up with. Operation Anagram is kind of geeky.
I bet whoever came up with that was well pleased with themselves.
A little bit is cute because they're like, we're trying to figure out who he really is. Adores.
Yeah, it's cute.
So basically, Peter Tobin, born in 1947, and from the age of 7 was in Nauru. He was in bore stalls. He was young offenders. He'd done all, the whole shebang before the age of 20. From 7 to being a prude, like, you know, he was in the 50s as well. That would have been 1950s school for disruptive boys. Like, he was getting the shit kicked out of him. You know that was happening. They used to cane kids in mainstream schools.
Yeah.
So they were proper walloping kids in a Peru at that age, at
what's
that time.
Peru?
It's a like a behavioral unit,
right?
So that was all before the age of 20. He was then in young offenders for petty crime and forgery. He was actually quite good at forgery. So then once he was out, he decided to live his life in earnest. So the 60s, he's living in Glasgow. He's got a job, various little jobs. He tried his hand at most things, painting, decorating, handyman, all sorts. And he would go out to the dance halls on a weekend and he would court the girls. So he started courting one girl in particular that he met at the Barrowlands Dance Club, Margaret. Oh. She was 17 years old, so a little bit younger. And straight away, he started to get dark. So they courted, like, they'd go out dancing. And then a couple of months in, he said, "Do you want to stop over?" And she gave the perfect response. I'll have to ask my mum first.
Brilliant.
Of course. And apparently he just lost his shit. Slammed the door, locked it. "Well, you're not fucking going anywhere. Like, I've said you're staying." And just proceeded to rape her.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And after that point, he pretty much did not let her go. She was kept prisoner in his flat. She was not allowed to see her friends. She was not allowed to contact her family.
Why wasn't her mum getting involved?
He had complete control over her. I mean, he was like drip feeding things. Like, she's here, she's around. They would go out together, but she was never out of his sight, and she wasn't allowed to have any life outside of him. And there's stories of that she had a dog and he slit its throat because it was barking too much.
Oh, God. I mean, that's a bad man.
That was the start.
Killing someone's dog, you're a bad, bad man.
And one of the worst things that he did was, after, I mean, the rapes were almost constant. One particular incident was that he stabbed her with a serrated knife and twisted it around inside of her. To the point where now, like, to this day, I mean, she's alive and well, but to this day, she can't have children.
Oh.
She, I mean, her words were, "I'm like a jigsaw inside."
Oh,
I mean, that's typical Scottish to make a complete joke out of it, but it really does make your minge cringe to think.
It does. I mean, but surely couldn't she wait till he's asleep and, like, slip out the door or... I mean, you'd think, but then I guess unless you're in that situation, you don't know how terrified you truly are.
I mean, I assume she thought he would come and get her.
I mean, she obviously thought he would kill her.
Well, at this time, the knife incident, he realised he'd massively fucked up, and he just left. He left her there, left the flat, got out, and left her to die. Neighbours found her because of the blood coming through the ceiling.
Oh, my God!
It's
too much.
Words do fail me, because obviously the Slaughter Podcast trusts a thin line between giving you the gruesome facts and also making light of it. And then sometimes I come across a gruesome fact and, like, there's just nothing I can say. It's horrendous. I mean,
that would be a bitch to get out. Like, that's
yeah, I mean, the amount of blood loss was just ridiculous. So she bled. I mean,
how much emotion would it take to repaint over that, though?
You can't comprehend. So she bled. The neighbours came and called an ambulance. She was in a coma for 3 weeks following this attack.
Oh, God, that is horrendous.
Once she'd come round and had started to recover, she was discharged but was taken back to Tobin.
No. Were they married?
Not at this time. So once she was discharged and got back to him, he knew that he needed, like, she was going to leave now. So he popped her in a car and was like, "We're moving to Brighton." Oh, I mean, from Glasgow to Brighton is as he just was driving down until he got to sea. Like, there's no further down he could go. So he took her and was like, "We're getting married." He just told her, "We're getting married," and they did. And they stayed together until he was arrested for petty theft. I mean, this is one of the things that the police in this story do try their best. Yeah. That he was, the theft had occurred in Glasgow before they'd left. The police had found them in Brighton and taken them back to Glasgow for questioning.
That's good.
That's the, obviously the department's that's working effort, together.
Because you couldn't just let that slide, like, well, they're all the way down there.
Yeah, like 500 miles. So they 500 miles. They took them back for questioning, and once they were there, Margaret's mum was able to come and fetch her from the police station and save her. Thank God. But once Peter was released, he moved back to Brighton, and within 3 weeks, was married to somebody else.
Oh my God.
3 weeks.
Like, who's fucking marrying him?
I mean, she, a nurse as well, an intelligent woman with a job. And Peter Tobin, he did jobs, menial jobs, but he'd been out, in and out of prisons and institutions his whole life. He didn't really have, his moral compass was so twisted that it was practically a spiral staircase at this point.
But if there's anything we're learning from this podcast, is that anyone can get in a relationship. Because the depraved, hideous, messed up man that we've looked at is very rarely they're single their whole lives.
I mean, he definitely...
They've all been married.
He definitely, at the start, he would pick people particularly who were vulnerable.
Yeah.
And he would, at the start, would offer... He would offer a caring, he would offer a nurturing. His control came across as affectionate, as interested, and then eventually was too much. But at the start, he was giving these people, these women, attention who really craved it.
Yeah.
I mean, they were married for a long time. Their marriage was not without incident. Sexual asphyxiation was a huge thing, and that was eventually what led to their divorce. She actually left for a women's refuge.
So is that choking during sex?
Yeah, that was his... And it said that that was pretty much his preferred method. Like, he couldn't really...
I mean, if that's every time, that would get pretty wearing. Exactly. Like, what's in it for me?
He couldn't really get off without it.
Anyway, can't I have a nice massage first? Just have normal sex for once.
So, after that, he then met Kathy Wilson... He was 16 years old. At this time, he was in his 40s.
Oh, daddy issues.
Well, she'd been in foster care. She'd lived with grandparents in foster care several times. So she was definitely vulnerable. And like I said, he was offering that nurture. He was offering that attention that as a 16-year-old girl, you're still craving. And she moved in with him. And they lived together in Brighton. Eventually, the violence started. But he'd got her pregnant.
Oh, God.
And so she stayed and married him. He convinced her to move away to Scotland. So they'd got together, they'd had the child, but still he needed more control. So like a cult leader, he knew that the way to get them to stay is to remove them from their family, remove them from their friends, and totally isolate them. So he took her away, but... Kathy had been so... I mean, her story is pretty horrendous. The reason... She'd known abuse already. And to her... And there's interviews with her where she was like, I've had worse than this.
Yeah, like, to her, that's normal. That's how relationships are.
Yeah, she justified it as, if he's had a bad day, he's going to beat me up. If I'm not wanting sex, he's going to take it. And she saw it as, that's what people do. She didn't think it was out of the ordinary.
That's so depressing, isn't it? That's not normal. If you're listening, that's, and you think that's normal, it's not normal. Get out of that relationship.
You feel trapped, but there's people that will help you.
Yeah, you deserve someone who will respect you. There's no reason anyone could ever be you that would be okay.
She did eventually threaten to leave him. Tobin, unfortunately, not just being like a violent, aggressive guy, was also incredibly manipulative. And said that if she left him, then he would kill her son, make her watch, kill her, and then kill himself. God. So she lived with him. After this declaration, it was a further 3 months that she lived with him until she managed to actually escape and take her son with her.
Good girl. So I guess she was plotting it that whole time, and she was just getting ready.
Yes.
And
that gave she was. She determined that it happened, and he apparently he'd never raised a hand to her son, but it was getting to the point where she couldn't really take care of him and stay with Toby.
Yeah.
So she moved down south. She moved back to her grandparents that she lived with before, who were down south. Tobin then also moved from Scotland back down to the south of England to be closer to his son. And for some reason, possibly due to her own childhood and the fact that she hadn't had a dad around and the fact that he hadn't actually abused their son, Daniel, Kathy decided that she would still let him have contact with their son, and she would let him go to be at weekends.
And maybe the son's putting the pressure on her. It's my dad, and he doesn't know.
I mean, the boy was still under five during this period.
Oh, so he's
she felt the pressure to be a good mum and let him see her dad. But to see Tobin again, I don't think it's... Anyway, she did. She would let Daniel go and stay with Peter Tobin in his flat nearby. But he used it as the perfect excuse to get more young girls into his flat as babysitters.
Oh my god!
Often, weekends when he would have Daniel, he would employ a young girl to come and look after him and then go out. Which led to one of his next serious attacks. Two 14-year-old girls came over to babysit, and he said to them, actually, I'm not going to go out, let's just stay and drink here.
I'd be like, well, you don't need me then, bye.
Well, these 14-year-old girls were like, oh, 14. Alcohol. Yes, please.
Yeah, brilliant. Underage drinking. Don't even have to do the job. Probably get paid anyway. Dream evening.
Exactly. So he got them drunk and then started to try it on with them. They weren't having any of it. So then he drugged them. He then decided, okay, this isn't really working out. I want to get it on with these girls, and I've got a 5-year-old son kicking around. So he rang Kathy, claiming that he was having heart problems and wanted to go to hospital. And she came over to get her son and was like, do you want me to go with you? And he's like, no, I think I'll be fine. I'm probably sure I'll be fine. I just need to sleep it off. Take him now.
Just sleep this heart attack off. Bye.
Yeah.
But ignore these two 14-year-olds in my house. It's fine.
So once she'd gone and taken the boy, he raped both girls. The conviction at the time was for buggery, which is obviously such an antiquated term these days.
Yeah.
He threatened them with knives for a long time, torturing them. And then once he'd finished, turned on the gas on the oven, opened it, and left the hat flat.
No, that's terrible.
Tried the same method again. Had not learnt from before. He thought, I've done it. Leave them to die. He, at this point, he just
doesn't... No one dies.
He doesn't have the balls to actually kill them. Like, he's the worst. Like, he wants to fuck them and have complete power over them, but can't bring himself to actually do the murder at this point.
But you think if it was now, they'd have a mobile phone in their pocket, they'd text the mum, come and get me, this guy's fucking mental, and they'd be gone in 10 minutes.
Well,
stuck there.
Amazingly, one of the girls woke up, despite the drugs, despite the gas, woke up and with her hands and ankles tied, managed to call the police to come and find them both. Yeah. Which is miraculous.
Yeah.
But both girls did live. So they knew exactly who he was, where he lived, who his ex-wife was. He was banged to rights, arrested. By someone's infinite wisdom, he was offered a plea bargain. And so he pleaded guilty to the rape. And so the attempted murder of the girls was dropped.
We'll just forget about that.
So this was 1994. At this point, and he was sentenced to 14 years for the rape of underage girls. So child molestation, pretty much.
Yeah.
Which, 14 years, I thought might have been longer. At this point, I have a cute old man alert.
Oh, I love a cute old man.
So Ronald Waterhouse was the judge for this case, and he is yet another adorable old man. He was pretty old. I think he's been old his whole life. And his accent is unreal. He's what every English accent should be. So this is what he had to say about Peter Tobin's case.
It was, I think, the worst case of its kind that I had during the 18 years I sat as a judge. The age of the victims, the fact that they were drugged and given alcohol, and then there was the evidence that he'd played with them, in effect, a sort of cat-and-mouse game, and threatened them with a knife.
Oh, he is adorable.
He's so cute, right?
I love his little jumper!
He's like an old man just melted into an Angora sweater, and that's where he sits to this day.
With his slippers and his pipe and his little cup of tea.
So, Peter Sobin served 10 years of that 14-year sentence and was released in 2004 on the Sex Offenders Register, though. And so at this point, he was 58 years old, and he returned to his childhood town of Paisley in Scotland.
When you think 58, like, you're done. That's it. Your crime days are over. You're old now.
Yeah, exactly. Which is part of the reason why he's still such a figure of interest now, in that a lot of serial killers don't start at 58. I mean, at this point, in the story I've told so far, he hasn't murdered anybody.
No.
And we know he's a serial killer.
He's just a domestic violent arsehole.
Yeah. So the murders that come about after this point, police are convinced this can't be the beginning of where
old.
He started. We've got to find out about his life before and see what he was up to. Because, like you say, there would have been an escalation of events that led to this.
It's like, no one starts a career at 60. Come on, that is the end of your career. You're done. No one's retraining at 60. Murderer or no murderer.
If we were 58, I think we'd be saying things different.
58, I'm starting no career. Whether it's murderer or teacher. I mean, how many teacher trainees do you get at 58?
None. How many teachers do you know that are 58? I was saying this to someone the other day, like, where are the old teachers? I've not seen one ever.
Long ago.
I'm worried that either they're being abducted or murdered in some weird kind of Logan's Run scenario.
They just can't be arsed with that shit anymore. They're teaching A-level.
So, Tobin's next major incident occurred in 2005. He met a lady called Sharon McLaughlin. And became friends with her. Like, they would drink in the same pub down the local and have a chat and things. One day he said, do you want to come have a coffee at my house? Again, she was a lot younger. He was now in his nearly 60. She was in her 20s. But
how is he pulling all these bitches?
I don't know. I mean, if you see him...
Was he cute?
Not really. Like, there's nothing particularly grotesque other than, like, he has sort of like a skeletal face. Like,
that's what women want. Not too grotesque, but skeletal face is alright.
Really emaciated, sort of waxy.
Oh, no.
Small guy. So he invited her over to his house for coffee, and they watched the football. And then she was like, okay, it's time for me to go home. I'm going to leave. And for some reason, he decided, nope, and jumped her with a knife.
So in fact, all he's getting is a first date, and then he's just like, right, I'm going to roll with this.
Yeah. But he picked the wrong girl, because Cheryl had been in the army. She'd been on a football team.
Brilliant.
She had been brought up with 8 boys in the house, and she
yes!
could fight back. She managed to get the knife from him.
Yes!
She was cut in the process, but he knew he didn't have a chance. So he did what any wiener guy would do in that situation, and was like, oh my god, I'm having a heart attack. help me now. And totally tried to turn the tables on her. She was like, you thought I was attacking you, but now, quick, help me, I'm going to die. And she was like, no.
Yes.
What are you doing? This is ridiculous. And so eventually he was like, oh, actually, it's not a heart attack. I'm fine. I think I'm fine. I was kidding you. I just need some fresh air. So she obviously felt some amount of pity towards him and said, sure, let's go out. But as soon as they got outside of the flat, she ran like billio.
Good.
She was gone. She
well
Forrest Gumped the shit out of there. She was away. She called the police, of course, and they went to his house the very next day, but he was gone. When a lot of the stuff that I've read about Peter Tobin, he's referred to as nomadic, as a wanderer. He's basically the British version of the drifter. He's around and about. So he evaded the police by staying in hostels and changing his name all the time. He began to use the name Pat McLaughlin. A little bit creepy in that he took her last name for his that new pseudonym. But one of the things that he would do, from similarly to the last few times where he left people for dead, is that he would then seek refuge in a religious place. He would go and join a church, he would go and join a religious group. That's where he would find solace, because they would take him in, and if he washed himself and if he spoke politely, then they would totally accept him.
Yeah.
And not suspect him either. So
he was old. Well, oldish.
Yeah.
He's taken advantage of the religious sect.
So he went, at this point, after the McLaughlin case, he went and joined a church and basically became their handyman. He would work doing odd jobs, and he would also, one of his main jobs was to work in a charity, feeding the homeless and running their kitchen. So he was thought of as a nice guy. He was, you know, well, respected, quiet, kept to himself, but no one would suspect him of anything else. Until there was a Polish student who attended the church, Angelina Kluk, and he took a liking to this lady and thought, right, she's going to be mine. So 2006, he was alone with her before one of the soup kitchens, and he hit her with a table leg. He then bound, gagged, and raped her.
This is at the church?
Yes.
Bloody hell.
Before eventually stabbing her to death.
Oh my god! That's disgraceful.
He put her into a plastic bag and then hid her in a void. It's, again, really similar to John Christie, this story. Hid her in the cavity underneath the church garage floor.
I mean, I'm just visualising a carrier bag now.
And then went to the kitchens and carried on preparing for that evening. Angelica was reported missing the next day, and they searched the church as they knew it's the last place she'd been. Tobin was interviewed. By Tuesday, there was nothing. This was on the either the Monday or the Sunday. By Tuesday, there was nothing, but Tobin was gone. So they released his pictures on the news, and a girl he'd made friends with back in Paisley, until she realised he was a sex offender, identified him not as Pat McLaughlin, but as Peter Tobin. He had then travelled down to London. I mean, he was constantly back and forth. Brighton, Glasgow, Paisley, London. He was all over the place. He travelled back to London, admitted himself to a hospital under the name James Kelly, where a nurse recognised him from his pictures on the news. And by Friday, the body was discovered. They could easily link the crime to Tobin, because once he was arrested, he was still wearing a t-shirt that was covered in
her blood.
His own spunk!
What?
Plus some of Angelica's cells. Like,
oh my God.
From the Sunday to the Friday, like, sometimes you might wear a top 2 days in a row, but not when you spunked on it. A week. Yeah. He wore the same top for a week, and it had evidence on it.
It's like when you, like, you've got some sperm on you, you use a t-shirt by the bed, no one's wearing that t-shirt again. Like, that's going straight in the wash. You don't put it on the next day. That's a spunk t-shirt. Absolutely. And it is labelled as such for a good fortnight.
And it's at this point that... So he was taken back to Scotland, arrested, and would not talk. Hence why Operation Anagram had to start. One of the police in the interview, in the documentary that I watched, he said that he couldn't visualise how someone could have committed such an act against such an innocent, attractive young female.
So he's never heard of Ted Bundy then.
Exactly. Well, one, he never heard of Ted Bundy. Two, this pissed me off massively, because the narcissist in me was like, oh, so you have to be hot to get murdered, do you? Like, I was thinking immediately, Jeffrey Dahmer, like, slept with so many guys, and he only murdered the ones that he thought were hot.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, so you're not... But the fact that he couldn't visualise that someone could murder an attractive person, I was like, oh, so the ugly girls deserve to die, do they? Like, those ones, yeah, I can see why someone would murder her, but I could never visualise why someone would kill an attractive girl. Like, and as well, don't judge a book by its cover. Like, you think she's hot. You've only seen a picture once, she's dead. She might have been a bell end. You don't know. Like, I just think
this is getting too close to the bone.
Well, he will have only have met Angelica. Again, he will have seen the crime scene, and he will have seen a photograph afterwards. Like,
and they always pick the
a little bit photo. Creepy, a little bit creepy that he's crushing on all these dead girls.
But they pick the cutest photos to make it seem the most tragic.
Of course. Like, just chill the fuck out. I feel like her attractiveness should not be brought into how bad... Like, that shouldn't be used to judge the severity of the murder.
No. It's never about how fit they are.
So, he was arrested. They had him banged to rights. And he was convicted for it. But again, they were convinced that he could not have begun to do such a crime like this. The fact that he disposed of the body so expertly, the fact that he had a violent history but wouldn't speak about where he'd lived, had no evidence, they felt like something must have been happening in his past that we didn't know about. So they started this nationwide operation to find out about him. They began to look into missing persons from places that Tobin would have been living in. There was a major story in Scotland in 1991 of Vicky Hamilton. She was last seen at a bus stop on her way home to Falkirk from Bathgate. And it was huge at the time. There was TV appeals, and it was Scotland's biggest search for a missing person then. But nothing had been found. During Operation Anagram, they realised that Tobin had lived in Bathgate during that time period. So they went to his house, where he'd lived at the time, searched around, in the loft, found a knife that he just discarded with material and skin of Victoria Hamilton. The DNA matched. He just put it in the loft.
Holy shit.
So,
and they would have touched it.
We had the creepy Brisbane loft hider. We've now got murder weapons in loft. Check your lofts. Check them. Like,
I'm going to check my loft now.
Definitely. If there's not a murderer, there's at least a murder weapon. With DNA on her. From 17 years ago, they were able to get that back.
Jesus.
Tobin, however, wouldn't admit to meeting her or anything. So at that time, they couldn't convict him fully. Although they had it from a house that he used to live in, it wasn't quite solid enough to convict.
Oh, come on. That's pretty solid.
Around the same sort of period, so still 1991, about 6 months later, there had been a lady, Diana McNichol, who had gone missing in Essex. She'd left a festival and was last seen hitchhiking. When will they learn? The 90s.
Never hitchhike. Do not hitchhike with anyone. They will murder you, for sure.
She said bye to a friend she'd met at the festival, and the man was convinced that she had driven off with a guy with a Scottish accent. So the Essex police were now aware of Tobin's profile because of the Operation Anagram that was going around all the police places, and they found that her credit card had been charged in the months following her death to places where Tobin had been living. So they interviewed his neighbours of where he lived in Margate, and one of his neighbours recalled him spending rather a lot of time digging a sand pit in his garden. The American listeners, that's sandbox. Ours are the same. They're a box that you put on the ground. You don't have to dig them out. It's not a quarry. Unless he wanted to put his child in a sandbox that he couldn't actually get out of, it wasn't a sandpit. So they searched the house, and while they were, this was the Essex police in Margate, and while they were excavating the garden, they found Vicky Hamilton's body, who'd gone missing in Bathgate, Scotland, so nearly 500 miles from where she'd gone missing. So
that's solid evidence.
The pathologist believed that she hadn't been taken and then murdered, that she'd been murdered and then taken to there. With a body. She'd been cut in two and wrapped in plastic again. But the plastic had preserved it to where they could see that she had been drugged and that she'd been strangled.
Wow.
And that blunt trauma showed that he'd knelt on her while strangling. They continued to excavate and then found Diana McNichol as well, this time in a number of plastic bags. They also found in her systems a drug that had been prescribed to Tobin at that time, and his fingerprints on the bags.
There we go.
So he was already in prison for Angelica's murder. He is now convicted of 3 life sentences for the 3 murders. Operation Anagram in 2010 was still ongoing. There's lots of theories around other murders that he might have been involved in. There is a figure from the 60s of Glasgow called Bible John.
I've heard of Bible John.
So a lot of girls were going missing from the Barrowlands Club in Glasgow, mentioned where he'd been dancing with Margaret. And he got the name because a taxi driver had seen him in the back of his taxi and he'd quoted the Bible to him. Now, we know that Tobin has links to religious groups. That was one of his favourite things to join. Yeah. We know he used to dance there. We know he lived there in that time period. We know that at the time he was murdering the girls he was convicted for, he it's believed he was well-practiced. His disposal of the bodies shows that he had experience. Yeah. So he's not been convicted for that, but there are strong theories that he was also Bible John, as well as other murderers too. God. So if you're interested in it, definitely look it up. There's loads of websites that really go into detail about how he could be linked to other murders. And some people believe that he's murdered. In prison, he admitted to murdering 48 women. But not specified who. So there's lots of stuff out there. You can really fall down the rabbit hole reading about Peter Tobin and what he's been up to.
That's what we're doing tomorrow night. My Saturday night is going to be reading about Tobin.
Done. I hope I'm saying it. If he's called fucking Tobin. No, I'm joking.
But that was super interesting. I loved it.
The glazed eyes say different.
I mean, it's just the alcohol.
But who gives a fuck? It's the end of episode 6. We did it.
Yeah, you fucking listen to it now. We don't have to be guilty.
You sat here. You've wasted your life. We're done. Listening to this doesn't make you a psycho.
Killing people does make you a psycho.
Get on the Facebook group.
Go fuck yourself.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. You've had enough staying home. You've had enough confinement. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds, like the breathable, silky, smooth tree runner, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree dasher, or the classic low-top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Whether you're traveling to the ends of the earth or settling in for a staycation, you need a shoe that's versatile enough to go with any outfit, durable enough to wear over any terrain, and lightweight enough to make packing a breeze. Being made from insanely comfortable, breezy eucalyptus fiber is a plus, too. When you wear Allbirds tree shoes, you're in vacation mode before you even leave the house. They're the only shoes your suitcase needs. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair of tree dashers, runners, pipers, and more at allbirds.com. That's ALLBIRDS.com.